I would like to introduce the first speaker, John G. from Buffalo.
All right, John. And I'm from Buffalo, New York. I'm going to say just briefly some things about me, not much. This month I just got to have a 19 and a half years clean. I have a home group that I attend faithfully, okay? It's on Wednesday and Thursday nights, and it's a recovery house for adolescents. Okay, and there's not a lot of people that are older that go. I've learned how to identify rather than compare. And I found that I get a lot of experience from them because I need to know how to get along with the teenagers at home. Okay, and who better can tell me than them? I go to two meetings a week. Okay, I went to a meeting. And I went to six meetings a week for my first 12 years. And whenever I cut down on a meeting, I always talk with my sponsor about it. I'm a firm believer in calling my sponsor on a daily basis. I know our literature doesn't say that anymore. I called every day, and, you know, what I found out is by calling every day, and what we did is before I picked up the phone, it was about what is it that I don't want to talk about? And then that's what we talked about. And what I ended up finding out is that I was actually doing a daily inventory since I had about 30 days clean. And it helped me work on today's issues today. You know, by the time I got to my eighth step, I had switched sponsors. My first sponsor, we did the first three steps verbally. It was short and brief, and I don't know, it was what it was. I called them every day. I went to a meeting every day. I prayed every day, and he told me I was working my first three steps, that I was powerless, that I was getting some help from someone else besides me, and he knew I was praying because I was saying the serenity prayer constantly, it seemed, because I wanted to use every day. You know, and when I got here, all I really wanted was to not feel the way I was feeling at the end. I didn't believe I had a problem. I didn't think that I had to work on anything. And they told me just to keep coming. When I wrote my eighth step, and the reason I'm going to start with the eighth step because it has to do with my ninth, and I'm going to talk about one person specifically on this list. There was a girl that was a friend of my significant other at the time. And we had a fallout, and this girl wreaked havoc in my life, you know. And the thing is looking back, okay, she called unemployment on me because I was working, okay, and collecting unemployment. And I remember being pissed off because how dare her. And you know what? Somebody told me, well, what was your part in that? It's like, you know, I want to hear it. Anyways. It became bitter between the two of us, and anyways, she went back out. And I knew I needed to have her on my eighth step list, and we got to that second part of it where it says it become willing. And it was like, and I was talking with my sponsor, it's like, you know what? I don't want to put her on the list. Don't want to put her on there. And he says, well, but why not? This is, you know, she's not here. She's been gone for a couple of years. She isn't around. You know, you don't know where she is. You're not going to find her. And it's like, you know what? I know as soon as I put her on that list, she's going to show up. And I just don't want to put her on there. And it took me about 5 to 6 months to get to the point where I finally put her on the list because my sponsor told me to keep praying on it. And it's like, okay, she's not showing up. I'll put her on there. Well, I put her on there, and you know what? It was about 6 months later. There was someone rang the doorbell at my house, and I looked out, and I couldn't believe it was her. you know. And my significant other went out and answered the door, and I was standing in the kitchen, and when she walked in, I opened the freezer door, and I stuck my head in there, and I said hello from the freezer to her as she walked by. And I proceeded to go into my room, get my phone, and call my sponsor and told her it was a mistake. I want to take her off. Okay? I'm not. We got to get her off of her. And he says, no, you can't go back and take them back. And I isolated in my room that day until she left, and thank God she wasn't there long. And I thought about it. It was like the next day or the day after when she called to talk with the significant other, and I answered the phone, and I told her that I was sorry. I was sorry for the things that I'd said, and, you know, and what I had said to her was that she's sicker than me. That's what started it. And I told her I was sorry. And she started to try to apologize to me, and I told her, no, I'm not looking for an apology from you. I'm sorry for what I put you through, the feelings that you had, and you're more than welcome at my house anytime. So feel free to come over. And she came over a couple more times, and we talked, and everything was fine. And she went back out, and I haven't seen her again. I think, I honestly believe that the God of my understanding just made her come back for a hot minute, just for me to be able to apologize, okay, to get that spot out of there. And you know what? What I learned is that the thing that with that resentment that I was holding wasn't so much about what had happened. It was more about my ego. I wanted to be right. You know, that thing in us that I always want to be right. And when I said that I need to be more careful with the hurtful things that I say, because I found that everyone's perception of reality isn't the same. It's like everyone in this hut is hearing what I'm saying, and these are all hearing something different, because we don't all hear things the same. And the worksheets that I was doing, we have a lot of different things where we have to go back and look at a dictionary to look up definitions of words. And the reason being is, like, each word has about 5 or 6 different meanings or more. And then as addicts, we have a problem communicating as it is. We don't really know how to say things. And seeing along the way, what I've learned, especially with my significant other, is tell me what you heard so I can tell you what I meant. And for me, those are some really precious words, okay, because have you ever been in an argument or a discussion, and somewhere along the line you started off at the same place, and somewhere along the line you realize you're talking about 2 different things? And I know everybody's been there, and the thing is usually what I would do when I get to that point, I'm still going to try to prove I'm right. And I've learned that I don't have to prove I'm right all the time. You know, and it took a while to get with that. You know, my amends started when I got clean. And, you know, and maybe some of us have been done that and some haven't, you know. And it was a matter to my immediate family. You know, I used with my significant other and her kids. And the kids were little. They went out without meals. I mean, And the thing is they were, at that time, when I got clean, they were living with their dad. And those 3 kids were hers. I left my 3 kids. I had custody, and I gave them up to my ex. The making amends with the people that are immediate family, the ones that love me, and the ones that are willing to allow me back into their lives, they were hard, but they were easy, if that makes sense. You know, and you know what? I remember my daughter coming to pick me up. I was staying at a halfway house, and how grateful I was that she came and picked me up and took me back to my mom's house, and, you know, that she loaned me $2. And when she loaned me the $2, I'm trying to tell her, it's like, look, really, I'm going to pay you this back. You know, because I stole her bank account. You know, like $100 here, $200 there. I was going to put it back with that check that I get on Wednesday. You know, the one I promised everybody. You know, and you know what? The thing is I was fortunate that my kids weren't looking at that. They were looking at, it's like, Dad, we just want you. We want you to be who you are. And the stepkids, they were, I don't really know. I know they were glad we got clean, but I think they were more afraid. You know, and making amends with them was where I was going with the 6 day. When I went to 6 meetings a week after like 18 months clean, I talked with my sponsor and we were getting the kids back, and that 7th day we were having was family day. It was a day for us to get together, for them to get over some of the fear, for them to get over the don't stay in the bedroom too long with the door closed. You know, don't stay in the bathroom too long. And you know what? It was those fears that I was part of putting in their hearts. You know, and them moving back in, it took a long time before they called at home. You know, and there was a lot of where they called her dad. Oh, you know, they're in their bedroom for like 2 hours now, or whatever it was, and panicking. And you know, when I remember taking the kids, we take them to the meetings. It's like, you know, I'm sure some of you can identify with the people that take their little kids to the meetings and how annoying that is. Okay? Been there, done that. And you know what? At the time, the three, they were probably, around 10, 11, 7, I don't know. They were little. They were everywhere. They were in everything. And you know what? And looking back, I don't understand why I was so dumb. But we take them to the meeting, we give them a can of pop and a candy bar, and then wonder why they ain't sitting still. Huh? You know? I mean, I was trying to do good, and I was doing bad at the same time. But the oldest one, she ended up using. She ended up in rehab. She's still manipulating. And you know what? I tried to be there. And when I found the one thing that I can always do to be there is just to continue doing what I'm doing. The reason I come to Narcotics Anonymous, okay, for one, is for me to stay clean. And you know what? Right now my life is good. There's so many good things that's happening for me. I got here spiritually, mentally, and physically bankrupt. I ended up having to live with my mother and my father. I was 42, had to be home at 10, and I was good with 10. It was like, whatever you want me to do. You know, I don't know how it is in this area, but in Buffalo, I'm not hearing like these simple suggestions. You know, I'm really not. You know, to go to a meeting, say a prayer, don't pick up. You know, call your sponsor, to get one and use them. And anyways, my parents, they wouldn't give me the keys. They would give me a ride. They wouldn't give me the keys for the car. And you know what? Doing that and being there with them and being on time, and I remember how hard it was, like making a phone call and say, look, I'm going to be 10 minutes late. I said, okay, I don't want you to worry. And when I left the house, I only had $2 because I was afraid to have more. Okay. With Liz, that's the oldest stepchild. She's a really sweet girl. She's really good at manipulating. And she's still using. You know, she called me last week and asked me, you know, where there's a meeting that night, and it's like, so, you know, I told her, and I found out that I can't, for me to go pick her up and take her there and drag her around isn't doing it. I've been here long enough to know that, you know, I can do all of those things. I can get you there. I can make you do whatever I want you to do as long as I'm there. And after that, you're going to do what you want anyhow. But I keep coming here because my life is different. And part of my ninth step is that someone was here when I got here. And I don't know how it is in your areas. But my area, you know what, there's quite a few people that are staying clean. But when I look around the rooms, I'm not seeing them. You know, see, in my ninth step, I stole like, I don't know, $300 to $500 worth of stuff a day, you know, when I was using. And I remember listing the stores, you know, it was like Sears, Penny's, you know, I had this list of stores. I listed the stores, and then I listed all the malls, and then I listed the towns, because I did it in all of them. Okay? And I can't tell you what I took from where. And you know, part of the amends process for me is showing up. And, you know, and I remember going to a meeting, and the topic was gratitude, and I had, I don't know, 6 months clean, and there was a guy there with 10 years, and he had nothing to say on gratitude, and it pissed me off because I thought he should have been grateful, you know. And I talked with my sponsor, and you know, and he told me, he said, so you think you're going to have 10 years and you're going to be grateful all the time, is that it? You know? And it's not so much about the being grateful as much as just showing up, you know, doing things here. See, for me, that's part of making some amends with my higher power. The God of my understanding that sets on me needs to be loving, caring, greater than me. For me, I also need him to be forgiving. And that's in my work, in my sheets that I wrote, that I really need the God of my understanding to forgive me. And you know what? I'm not a mass murderer. But that's not the point. It's not how bad it was. It's what I did and how it makes me feel and how I know the things I was doing wasn't really who I am. You know, that I found myself in places doing things I would have never done. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that the drugs have the power to change me into somebody else. You know, and I keep coming because between me and my higher power, I've got a lot to make up for. And, you know, for me, a lot of this stuff, some of it's easy to do after I've been doing it a while. But in the beginning, everything is difficult. You know, trying to get closer with my parents. You know, I remember talking with my sponsor about, it really messes me up in Narcotics Anonymous. I come here, total strangers, hug me and tell me they love me and to keep coming no matter what. That you're willing to take me in and it doesn't matter one way or the other. And you know what, I told them, I said, all I really wanted from my mom and my dad was them to just like hug me and tell me they love me. You know, it's like I my first year, whatever it was, you know, I mean, like it would be Father's Day to be happy Father's Day, Dad. It's like that. And I realized that we walk through the house without having any kind of physical contact. And if by chance we were going to bump into each other, we both moved to make sure it didn't happen. You know, and my sponsor told me, you know, to pray on it, go to some meetings, and look at what my part is. And my sponsor is always really big on what's your part and what can you do different. And I thought about it for a while, and it's like, you know, they're just not going to do this thing. They're not. They're going to, like, tell me how stupid I am or whatever it is. And I called my sponsor, told him I had the plan. And he said, yes, that sounded good. You know, and I remember going to my parents' house a couple of times and not having enough courage to follow through. So one day I finally walked in and it's like, okay, I'm going to do this thing. And I walked over to my mother and I hugged her and I kissed her on the lips and I said, I love you, Mom. And she says, I love you too. And then I walked over to my father and I hugged him and I kissed him on the lips and told him I loved him. And he mumbled something. You know, and for me, that was part of some amends for me. And you know what I found out? Not only was that for me, but it was for them. Because now, no matter what, when, well, my dad passed away, but it was the same when he was here. It's always the hug, the kiss, and I love you, and how are you? And you know, and the funny thing is my brother and his family, he's got there's 10 kids, and they're all doing that thing too. You really get recovery by osmosis if you're not an addict, it seems. Because the good things that we do, they catch up on. It seems like they catch on to it, though, easier than we do. We don't seem to struggle as long. And see, part of this immense thing is making my whole family different. For them to be acting different, even though they're not in this program. And I was fortunate enough to have them always back me on this. It was like, you know, they'd look at the clock and say, gee, don't you need to go to a meeting? You know? And see, the thing is they pointed out to me, they remember who I turn into. And that they're really happy to see me. You know? In that process, I had to go back. It was funny. I was driving past a house. It was the last place that I rented, what I was using. And this was, had to be, I don't know, about 4 or 5 years after I did the eighth step. And I drove by and it dawned on me, it's like, wow, I need to make some amends here. And I went back and I talked with my sponsor. It's like, do I really need to do this? And he says, yeah. Because I was still trying to find that way out. You know, I don't like to have to say I'm sorry. I don't like the uncomfortable feeling of what are they going to say. And you know what? I drove past that place a couple more times until it's like, okay, I'm going to go over there tonight and I'm going to do this. And you know what? It was really hard. I pulled up in the car, my heart was pounding, and I'm sweating, and you know all that racing stuff that goes on inside, and it's like, what's going to happen? And I get out of the car, and I walk, and I knock on the door, and this girl answered, and it's like, is your mom or dad home? It's like, no. Oh, okay. Well, it's like, how long have you lived here? And she said, they only lived a few years. It's like, well, by any chance, would you know, like, where the people lived, that did live here, where they moved to? And she said they moved out of state, and that they really didn't know, and that it's been, I don't know how many years. And, you know, I can't track them down. And, you know, some of the amends, what I found is not so much that I make the amends, is that I'm trying to make the amends. That I'm going through the process of doing what I need to do because, you know what, I didn't know who was going to open the door. And I'm thinking, this guy's going to whoop my ass. You know, anything and everything you can think of when you're on this side of the door went through my mind. And I was afraid. There's no doubt in my mind. I was afraid. But it was okay. It was okay because I walked through that door of fear, and I think what holds me back a lot in recovery, I like to call them doors, and each door has some fear. There's something that I don't want to do, something I don't want to do different, or whatever it is, I found that if I don't walk through the door, just like when I noticed that I needed to stop at that apartment, I drove by a few more times before I could go to the door and knock on it. I had to work up some kind of courage. But the more doors that I walk in through in recovery, the more things that I find that they're really not as hard as I think they're supposed to be. Once I get to the other side of the door, it seems a lot simpler. You know, part of my ninth step, too, is this isn't from my sponsor. This is from going to meetings and listening. And I heard someone say that whenever they get to the end of a checkout, or wherever it may be, and if there's a little can there or something there, to put something in there. And that's part of my amends process for like that stuff that I stole, for the different things that I did. You know, And whenever I put it in, I don't bother to read what it's for. It's for me. This is for me. And I do that, and you know, what I've also found out as part of my amends process is to stay here and have other people to share these things with. You know, going back to the guy that I was talking about earlier that had 10 years and didn't have any gratitude, and my sponsor told me at that one that, like, if you really don't like the way he acted, well, then don't be that way. And if you're really lucky, you can get to stick around here and share that with someone else, and it'll be truly is not doing it. Okay? And if you're more fortunate, there'll be more. And see, for me, that's all part of my amends. The amends process is staying here. You know what? I know that there's, you know, it's like, I can tell you, I get a lot of phone calls. I sponsor quite a few people. And mostly, I don't want to answer the phone. And the reason I picked up the phone is someone picked up the phone when I was calling. Not to mention, I still owe some stuff to my higher power, you know? And it's just, as I do these things, the more the things that I do, the better that I feel. It kind of seems stupid that I'm making some amends and I'm getting a reward. I don't know, like, how that all plays out, but it's the way that it works, you know? It's just like before I go to a meeting, I really don't want to go. And then once I'm there, I'm glad I'm there. And when I leave, I always feel better. You know? And another thing that's in my amends process, too, is I've been on the hospitals and institutions committee since I had 6 months clean. And next November will be like 20 years. And I go to our committee meetings. And I have a place that I go to all the time, you know. Right now I'm going out to a state prison, you know, and there's people that are out there, you know, that are doing 20, 30 years, 40 years, you know. And you know what, I know this much, I can't do anything about the time that they have there, but I'm making their day just a little bit brighter. And not because I'm me or any of that, because, you know what, I really don't think I have a whole lot of information anyway. I just keep coming here because I'm learning. I'm trying to get better, and I know when we go there, their faces light up. You know, I guess I'm making a plug for H&I if anyone isn't in. You know, and the thing is this facility, there's I don't know, 1,200 or more guys, and we have like anywhere from 8 to 17 that come. And if you haven't gone, and you get these people that come there for an H&I meeting, they're hungry. There's no side conversations. There's some desire to do some things. I mean, like we went over the pamphlet of, now I'm going to get lost, right, of living a program just for today, just like, and to let them know, I get that there's things they can't do there, you know. They don't have the freedom to do the things I do. They can't call me sponsor. They got to be careful about what they talk about. Just like the room that we're in, we really don't know if it's bugged or not. We're thinking it ain't. Okay? But, you know, you don't want to, like, admit to anything in this room. Okay? So you're really talking riddles, you know, if you got to bring something up. But I do know this much, too. You know, that's kept me clean. And you know what? And keeps me in touch with who I could be. You know, because I've shared with them guys more than once. You know, the only difference between them and me is that they got caught. On any given day, when I was using, they could have got me for a lot of different things. On them days when I was running around with a gun or a knife, you know, or just being stupid or whatever. I don't, you know. You know, and I'm really grateful that those things didn't happen to me, and that I have the opportunity to be here. My mom, you know, it's like with her making the amends, she told me, you know, it's like I stole from her and manipulated her. I mean, and you know, don't get me wrong, this is all my wife. This isn't just while I was using. This is like when I was a baby, I was a pain in the ass, from what she tells me, okay? I never like fit in anywhere. I was always going the other way, you know? And when I got clean, you know what? She told me all she wanted me to do is just to not use. That's all she wanted. And I remember, you know, trying to tell her that I'm sorry and different things. And it's all she ever says. And, you know, when I got clean, at that point, I was living in this halfway house or whatever you want to call it. And I stayed there for a few weeks because my parents were always the enemy. You know, when we talked, it was an argument. You know, and don't get me wrong, when there was an argument, I didn't argue much with my mom. And Dad, I would leave, or I just wouldn't go. The way that it is today, I talk with my mom, and we have conversations. She'll tell me, you know, it's like that she's lonely, she misses my dad, you know, that she's being forgetful, and she forgets this, and she forgets that, and she goes through different things where she can't sleep. And, you know, we came to this place where sponsorship has given me the ability to kind of be able to have a relationship with my mom on the same level as the sponsorship thing that I have with my sponsor, you know. And I tell her on numerous times, it's like, Mom, Narcotics Anonymous is working for you too, you know. And the thing is, it seems like every 5 years, she calls me and wants to know did I do anything stupid last night. You know, the last one was when I had 15 years, and it's like, and I told her, it's like, no, I'm really okay. And she says, good. You just, you know, the funny thing is, she says what you all say. She says, well, so you just keep doing what you're doing. You know, and it's just like, I'm going to the prison, and she says, good, good, you keep doing that. You know, she's watched a lot of programs on addiction, okay, because she's trying to learn and trying to understand. She's read the basic text. Okay, and she asked me. She says, "Well, this is can I ask you a question?" It's like, "Sure." She says, "Why would you want to do the first one?" Come on, that was the easy one. But you know, the relationship I'm in now, we have three girls. Okay, one was using. I don't know if she is now or not, and. She just had this. We had to tell her she had to move. Okay, she moved back in with her dad. Not a good place, but you know what? You have to live with some rules and limitations. And the other two, they're 16 and 20. Okay, and the 16-year-old, me and her, we bump heads like constant. And you know what? It's like in the middle of it. When I find myself yelling, I say, I hate yelling, I need to stop. And they hear that, and they know what I'm doing, because I really hate how I feel, because now I'm not saying shit, I'm not telling you what I want to get across to you, and it's making me feel worse. And I'm trying, actually, before we came here, yesterday we had the conversation again, because I was going to have someone go there and babysit, basically, the 16 to 20-year-old in here with this. It's like, why do I want to trust you? Okay? You just told different lies, you did different things, but anyways, we sat and we talked, and I brought up that thing about how I feel, and she says, yeah, I know why you do that. And it's like, good, you need to do that. You need to look at and think about how you feel and what you can do to stop that madness. You know, the yelling and the screaming and what's the point? But, you know, the thing is my fiance and the three girls were in my car. And I was having a long day, and this is only about a couple months ago. This is like recent. And, you know, because that next step I wanted to is that we make amends right away, like, you know, we take a look at what we're doing, and Anyways, I got the call. I'm in bed. I'm ready to go to sleep. I'm like, was crabby already, okay? And the car broke down, and now I want to take it out on everybody. And I'm yelling on the phone, okay? And not at anyone in particular, but they all took it personal, okay? And when I got there to get the car, I got the car started, got it home. I'm still not, like, being a nice guy, to say the least, okay? And the thing is, the next morning, when I woke up, first of all, when my fiancée got home, I let her know that I was wrong and I'm sorry and I don't need to do that. That was out of line, and I'll try not to do that again. Okay, that's without anyone telling me I need to do that. I know how I feel. And it was out of line. And those are the things I have to take care of right away. And then what I did is I called the oldest daughter, the one that's living with her dad. And I told her, I'm sorry how I acted. I'm sorry if it made you feel bad. And she's, oh, no, it was okay. And it's like, no, it's not okay. It's not okay for me to act that way for no reason and to make other people feel bad. Okay? And then I called the other two, and I talked with them, and I told them all the same thing. And they're all trying to, like, give me the easy way out. That's okay. It was yesterday. No big deal. It's like, no, it was a big deal. Maybe not to you. And I know at the moment it was a big deal for them. Because what I found with them is they don't hold resentments like I do. When you piss me off, I don't forgive. I'm not, like, ready to blow it off and move on to the next thing. You know? So when the opportunities come along, see, in those amends that I'm making there are for that, but also, because I've learned, I want my kids to have some values and some direction. And how can I expect them to have it if I don't? Okay? And part of this program is me being a better human being. For me, the whole thing comes back down to right in the beginning at the symbol where it talks about do the right thing for the right reasons. I remember asking my sponsors, like, isn't that what this whole book is about, this whole program? If I just do the right thing for the right reason from moment to moment, isn't that exactly it? You know, and we all fall short. You know, and I know this. No one beats me up more for falling short than me. Okay? I can have any one of you do exactly the same thing I did, and I'll tell you, it's okay. It's no big deal for you. But for some reason, I think it's a big deal for me. And I guess that goes along with the part where I'm trying to make up with my higher power. Because I still think, you know, that there's things I need to make up for, and there's so much more room for improvement. And that's part of why I do keep coming to Narcotics Anonymous, too, is that, you know what, beyond my wildest dreams happens here. And I can't wait to see what happens next. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
I would like to introduce the second speaker, Todd M. from the Miracles in the Mountains group of NA in the Poconos.
My name's Todd. I'm an addict. I'd like to thank John for his message. And I'd like to thank the Lower Mountain Highlands for asking me to share. It's funny, we were talking about that this morning, that somebody asked Ron if he was going to share, and myself, and we joked around about being pinch hitters. You know, we're just pinch hitters, right? And, a gentleman, the programming guy came up and asked me to share on the tradition, and, I don't know if I like it, but I'm more than happy to serve, right? And before I start, there's something in my head. I was up at the meeting this morning, and, during the meeting, I got a text message. I was turning off my phone, to make sure it was off, right? And I had a text message from a buddy in my support group, Jack, from the Poconos, and I put my glasses on, and it said that we lost another one, buddy. My little sister died last night, and if you guys could help me, right, just and humor me to just have a moment of silence, right, for Jack and his family and everybody affected in that accident, please. Thank you. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. Because the one thing I said, what can I do, right? And he said nothing, you know. But the last thing he said to me is pray for us. You know what I mean? So, you know, this is a great opportunity for us to do that. You know, when the guy told me about, you know, sharing on the night tradition, of course, the first thing I ask is, yeah, you know, I would do it, right? And then, which one is that one again? Yeah, which, you know, it's, when they get up there, it gets a little confusing for me, right? But it's the one that says that we ought never be organized. We may create service boards and committees directly responsible for those who serve, to those they serve, right? And like the night tradition is, it's set up for our groups to establish committees if they need them to alleviate that responsibility and those diversions that could divert us from carrying the message to the attitude still suffers in our home groups. You know, when our area was small, we took on those responsibilities. You know, carrying messages to prisons, you know, in H&I. We tried to get our message out to the public, right? And that would conflict, you know what I mean? That conflicted and diverted our groups from being set up to do what we do. I set up my home group. Our home group is set up to carry the message the addict who still suffers. And our business meetings, our group conscience, should be geared for that, to further that purpose, right? When I first got clean, right, my sponsor, like I called my sponsor, and like all the rest of our conversations, I was complaining about something, right? I was complaining about something, whatever that was. And he said to me, he said, you want relief from that? He said, do you want to get over what you're going through, right? And I said, yeah, that's why I'm calling you. And he said, help somebody else. And he hung the phone up on me. And he didn't say it like that, right? So I was like, what the... So I called him back, right? And I was like, I'm going through something here. And he said, you know what? That doesn't matter. He said, your only hope is to help another recovering addict. That's your only hope, right? And through that, I got with people, right? I was fortunate enough to get with people that understood the value of service, right? When I do service for Narcotics Anonymous, like you were saying, that paradox, that, you know what I mean, if I do this, like if I do service, how much I get in return, right? And results count in recovery, right? Results count in recovery. And I found early on, by getting with those guys that that did service, and I was directed to these guys. Like I was picked, they picked me up and said, you know, get with that one. Get his number. They took an interest in me, right? They took an interest in me and guided me, right? And these guys were basically telling me the same thing. If you get in the center of this, you won't fall off. You won't fall off, right? And this is coming from a guy who couldn't stay clean. I couldn't stay clean. You know, I didn't want to buy into it. I just wanted to use successfully. You know what I mean? I just wanted to learn how to use successfully, you know? And when that didn't work, when I got to a point, right, of willingness, and I should say I got to a point of desperation, which took me to a point of willingness, right? Like I started to listen, and I took direction, you know? I would set up and break down every meeting until I had enough money to use, right? And then I'd drag my ass back, set up and break down every freaking meeting, okay? That's what I did, right? And I in my mind, I was like, look at me. I'm setting up and breaking down every meeting, right? You know? But it was when I got to that point, and this is so, it's real obvious in my life with the people that are in my life, that like when I took direction from the group, from my support group, from my sponsor, things started to change for me. Things, that's the only time when things started to change for me. When I surrendered and took direction, right? Like my experience in service, right? It's, you know, when we talk about being organized, like, you know, we joke around about not being organized a lot, you know what I mean? And it's to say, when they talk about organization, I feel like they're talking about organization like it talks about in our literature, about government and oppression, right? You know what I mean? We don't, when we do service, we do service not to, a lot of times I'm in a committee and, no, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but I have had times in committees, it's hard work. Some of those committees are working hard, right? And through that hard work, they get to a point where they feel that their work is more important than what they're directed to do. Like they feel like they know better because of the apathy around them, that they no longer need to be accountable to those they serve, right? And that's a really dangerous place. And we've all experienced it in our recoveries. If we've been around and you go and you went to area service, you know, there's been tables turned and fist fights about this shit, right? And it's very easy to do because, you know, if I'm carrying the weight, right, and you're on the other side, you're not carrying your weight, you know, that breeds, you know, that can have a tendency to breed resentment, right? And the way I got through that, and I'm no different, okay? I'm no different, right? The way that I worked through that is through sponsorship and a support group. Because I was, like I knew, well, I tried to, you know, fuck you guys, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? And that really never got me very far, right? It never really furthered my message, you know what I'm saying? And it never did much good, right? So through a support group and sponsorship, they guided me to and talked about my expectations and talked about you know what I'm getting. You know, are you clean? You know, that's what. Are you clean? Are you still clean? You know what I mean? That would be the question they'd ask me, and I'd say, yeah, I'm clean, right? And it's like, well, that's, you know what? You know, you're staying clean. Be grateful, right? And going to traditions meetings and talking about traditions. When I first got involved in service, we were in the book all the time, right? Trying, you know, for all the wrong reasons, right? But we were in the book all the time. And I tell you what, because of that, I got an understanding of what understanding I have today is because of that effort, you know, that misguided effort I put in trying to prove a point, right? On the area floor, I'm digging in the book, right? We're in the book. We're in the works high and wide. We're calling guys with 20 and more years clean, right? And, you know, but because of that effort that we put in, like I think I gained an understanding of like what my part is in service, right? And I got a little bit, I got an understanding of what unconditional love is, right? Unconditional love. And I had a great experience. I went into, I was involved in H&I, you know, for a long time. And this is before we had panel leaders and, you know, all that stuff, right? And, I was going into the jail. And actually, we had an H&I presentation. The work release had their own meeting that they ran. And I was fortunate enough to sponsor a couple of guys in there, and I'd go in on Thursday nights, right? And this one particular guy, this was about 10 years ago, I guess, more than 10 years ago now. He was really willing, you know what I mean? I was, you know, we went over steps, and, like, I sponsored him, and he got out, and, he didn't see used, right? He used. And, he went back and forth. He was in and out a little bit, so I'd see him when he, you know, I'd see him every once in a while, he'd just call me, you know what I mean? And this guy, it was 10 years. Of him in and out, right? And every time he'd call me, whether he was boogered up or in a jackpot, right? Like, I always tried my best to not judge him and to take his phone call. And if he needed to meet me, I met him. If he wanted me to do, like, what can I do? Like, that's what I asked him. What can I do, right? And by doing that, and by not judging him, like, it was my experience that whenever it got bad, he would call me. He called me, right? And, you know, this guy came around again a couple years ago, right? And he told me that, you know, he would call me through the years. I'm getting married. I said, oh, Carrie, no, not Carrie, somebody else. I said, what the fuck are you doing? Where are you at? Let me, you know what I mean? When did this happen? Oh, I just met her. I said, where are you at? I'm coming over, right? I got over there, he's gone. You know, I met his fiance, though. She was beautiful. You know, she was a nice lady, nice codependent woman, right? You know, I don't know where he went. He just left, right? But he came in and I talked to him, and he said, you don't know what it was like. I said, well, he said, no, you don't know what it was like. Every day waking up saying, I'm going to call Todd today. I'm not going to use. Every friggin' day. And then having to use. You know what I mean? And I just hugged him, man. You know what I mean? I don't even like to think about myself every day. Imagine some, you know what I mean? Horrible, right? Horrible. Horrible existence, you know. But when, you know, he just celebrated 2 years clean. You know what I mean? And that is not me, dude. I'm telling you. I'm the most egotistical, self-centered motherfucker you're ever going to meet. Okay? And that's just me. You know what I mean? And what, through service and sponsorship in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm just able to, you know, just ask God to get me out of the way enough to be able to extend myself. So I don't mind hard work. You know, I don't mind hard work. But it's always expectation. I got to get all that other stuff out of the way. You know what I mean? I don't mind getting in there and, you know what I mean, and battling, right? But, It's not the best. It's the surrender I have a problem with, especially the quiet surrender it talks about in the basic text, you know. But I'm getting there, and our service committees sometimes, you know, it's real important. It's not to say our service those committees that we have, they should be organized. You know what I mean? That's why we have them. They should be organized. But that organization shouldn't get in the way with the content of what they're supposed to do. The content of what they're supposed to do overrides anything, right? And I think it's real important for us to maintain a real clear understanding of what our purpose is in that committee, and try to adhere to that through all that other stuff. Like when I chair a subcommittee, it's my choice, and I chair through consensus. I have a consensus based, which is can be really rough and tumble. You know what I mean? When I chair a meeting, it's usually a service committee. It's usually through consensus that everybody gets a say. And I feel that no matter how many times it's said, right, the same way with different people, they need to be heard. Right? Especially in area service. We talked about this a lot. Like what anybody, if somebody has their hand up, it doesn't matter. We need to have the patience with them to be heard. You know what I mean? Because it's my experience, once that's all done, and once we come to a consensus, then it's unified. And then there's no, you know, to this, to that, too fucking bad, this is it. You know what I mean? That never sat right with me. You know what I mean? And we do need to have that. We do need to facilitate our meetings, right? We need to get out of there at a certain time. But if I go in there with the expectations of getting out at a certain time, buddy boy, you're screwed, right? You know, go in there, like, you know, the best thing that I have some fun, and I'm a little bit disruptive, you know what I mean? In the service committee, you know what I mean? Hands, you know, that type of thing. But you know, I wish I could say I'm working on it, but you know, I think it's real important that we hear, like, you know, those people that we were directly responsible for, like especially the newcomer, if he has his hand up, you know, he needs to be heard. And no matter what comes out, right? No matter what comes out, we hear, we say, you know, I mean, we acknowledge that person, and they need to be heard, right? You know, service for me has been, like, I wouldn't be clean. There is no way that I'd be clean today if it wasn't for service. Because I wouldn't have recovered to the point where I would have stayed here if it wasn't for service, you know? And that service goes, that service for me goes well beyond Narcotics Anonymous today, you know? When I first got clean, right, I bought ice hockey equipment, right? I couldn't skate, right? But I always felt myself an ice hockey player. I always fancied myself an ice hockey player, right? But I couldn't skate, right? Never played. So I bought all this hockey shit, right? I was calling Ron this, right? And I went to the rink, you know what I mean? I lost dreams awakened, new possibilities arise. We're going to rack some guys up, right? Let's go. And it just didn't fall into place for me. Like, you know, there was no, I'm over 30, you know, like I was older, right? You know what I mean? I was over 35 then, right? And they said, well, you're going to have to play with these kids. They look like the Flyers out there, full check. I said, you know what I mean? Don't you have any? There was nothing in place. They said, well, get a couple skating lessons and go out there and do your best, right? So I took a couple skating lessons, and I never felt comfortable enough to say, hey, let me play with you guys. Because they were, you know what I mean? They were at a point that, you know, I would have been a hindrance. They wouldn't have had any fun, and I would have got killed, right? But long story short, I was talking a couple of years ago to a guy, and he started talking about this geezer league, right? They call it geezer hockey, right? And it was custom to the beginner, intermediate guy that wanted to learn ice hockey, right? So I joined up, right? And like the newcomer. It was like I was a newcomer, and they were very gracious to me because everybody was learning, right? Everybody was learning. Now it's 3, 4, 5 seasons later, right? And now they don't want to, like, the guys are good enough that they don't want to skate with the guys that are just starting. they don't want to skate with those guys that were just starting. Like, they want to be able to pass. They want to, you know, skate a certain level of hockey, right? Let's have tryouts, right? Let's have tryouts. And I'm just, like, you know what I mean? I'm just another guy there. And I said, spoke my mind, right? And I said, you know, the spirit of the league that gave us this success is going to be lost if you start that. It's just going to be another hockey league. You know what I mean? We have, like, 300 or 400 members, right? 300 or 400 guys doing this, right? Women and men, right? And if you start having tryouts or starting separating or telling people that they can't do it, you know, it's the spirit of the league will be lost. And I said, and that's why you are gaining, that you have this success and that you will continue to have success, right? And last spring, like all these people came up to me and I thought, ah, shit, because they were all board members. I thought they're going to fucking kick me off for all my penalties. You know what I mean? I thought, oh, man, I mean, you know, because I kind of went over the boards a couple times after some guys, you know what I mean? And I thought, they're going to, you know, I'm going to get reprimanded for this. Like, and they came to me, and they asked me to be on the board. They asked me to be on the board, and I was, like, thinking, like, are you kidding me? You know, are you kidding me? Like, I'm the one, like, there's constantly, guys are constantly swearing and coming at me, right? And it's because of Narcotics Anonymous, right? And our message, right? And you guys showing me how to serve, right? That I was able to do this, you know? And I can't tell you how excited I am about this, right? And now all of a sudden nobody's swearing at me, right? Like, everybody's real, you know, to me, you know, and I made friends. Like, I didn't have any friends outside of NA. I didn't have hardly any friends when I got here, right? And, like, you know, now I'm developing relationships with guys outside of Narcotics Anonymous. They call me, you know, and I call them. Like, when I have trouble with my daughter wants to have a body piercing, you know what I mean? So I called, like, I call guys that I respect in there and get their opinions, you know? And through service, I guess my point is through service, it really expanded and enriched my life. You know what I mean? And it's like the most important thing that I ever did. You know what I mean? And I'm just grateful because I would have never came up with this. I would have never came up with the idea of doing this. I'm just grateful for the people that came in front of me that guided me towards service. And it's my obligation to do the same thing with the newcomer. Grab the newcomer. Make sure that when they're standing by themselves, you're talking to them. Right? Because they're the most important person there. Because without the newcomer, you know what I mean? Without that constant influx of people, right? For me to regurgitate what was given to me, not only helps them get a foundation, but reinforces my own program. You know, because I got to reinforce my program or I'm going to lose it. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'd like to thank everybody. And again, John, thank you so much. I got a lot out of it. Thanks for allowing me to share.